What do you do when your boss is a control freak? A control freak that can't handle reality and ends up trying to overcharge the customers for the sake of their ego. Yeah, how do you deal with that? Well, we'll find out today on Office Horror Stories.
Welcome to the world of crazy workplaces, Office Horror Stories.
Have a crazy workplace story to share? Call in toll-free.
1-833-HATE-JOB.
1-833-HATE-JOB.
Or write in at officehorrorstories.com. This is Office Horror Stories.
And indeed it is. And yes, the phone number is 833-HATE-JOB to share your office horror story with us, or write it at officehorrorstories.com. Completely anonymously, get it off your chest. If you want to call in and you're afraid, somebody might recognize my voice, just tell me at the beginning of the call, hey, please disguise my voice and I will disguise your voice, okay? And of course, when you write in, I'm never going to say your name. I'm not going to give your IP address or anything like that. Just share your story. Can be current, can be past. Don't use names. Don't use business names. Just share your story. Get it out there. We would love to hear it. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you for this episode. And how is your quarantined world?
Mine's great since I'm not quarantined right now.
Not now, but it's March 9th of 2020.
Just like everybody in the U.S., that's a possibility in the future.
March 9th of 2020 as we record this episode airing in May, I believe. So I don't know what
you think. You don't know. By like May, like, I could have been quarantined twice.
We could be looking back on this shit going, oh, that was crazy. It's all gone now, which I hope that that's the case. Or we could be like, this shit doesn't end, does it? I don't know.
One great thing for you is you work from home.
I do.
So you don't have to, like, take paid time off or something.
Yeah.
That is the weird thing, like, you know, I know people who only get, well, I know people who get no paid days because they're part-time, or I know people who get very little PTO. What do you do if you're forced to take 12 days off? If you're a waiter, what do you do?
I do not know. I know at this moment in time, there's some talk going on in our government about there being some sort of new thing introduced where it's like we have to pay people for their time off, and like they're going to reimburse employers. I don't know how any of that's going to go, but as of the 9th, it's like the beginning talks. By the time this airs, maybe that's in place. I don't know.
Well, maybe like people who have short-term disability, that could kick in for your 2 weeks because you're not really in need of short-term disability because you might be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But maybe they could make that exception or something.
Make that what kicks in.
What would you do?
I don't know. I mean, I've been hearing these stories because right now, we've only tested roughly 1,500 people in the U.S. as of us recording this. It's quote unquote not widespread here yet, but again, we haven't tested hardly anybody. And the cruise ship thing is something that's pretty big in the news right now. Three have been quarantined. And I'm hearing
you wouldn't get me on a cruise ship right now.
And I'm hearing about all the folks are getting off some of these boats, and then it's like a 14-day quarantine once they're off at like an Air Force base. And they did some interviews with people, like they're like, these people are small business owners, like that runs on them and they can't leave the quarantine. It's like, what the fuck would you do? I'm putting myself in their shoes going, what would I like? I'd want to get a recorder. And knowing me, I'd probably have one with me and I'd go around and like make a podcast about the experience and document it. But I'd also at the same time go and get a shitload of ghost stories. I'd basically keep running the show and just, you know, just make shows for the next. It'd probably be really interesting. But that's not, that doesn't work when you, you know, you run the local, you know, Quick Mart or you have a hamburger joint or whatever, you know. You can't not be there. So,
and by the time the show airs, I mean, things could totally have changed.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see, like, back when Y2K happened, I remember my company at the time saying, you cannot fly anywhere for New Year's Eve. You can only go within driving distance. And there was all these things like gas pumps might not work. There was all these weird things. But I could see employers saying, you can't vacation in certain places. Like, we'll give you a week off, but if you go to this certain place, you know, because in my company, I heard that, like, somebody was planning a trip to Japan, and the company said, you know, when you come back, you're going to have to be quarantined. Yeah. And that's on you.
Yeah.
So do you want to still go? And so I don't know if it was a he or she, but canceled the trip.
Yeah.
But I think that was a smart idea to cancel the trip, not the time to go there.
It is. That's what that's if there that's not going on already by the time this airs, that, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, like, by the time this airs, you know, you could get some super good deals on cruises, or can you get one at all?
It'll be ghost ship, but hey, it'll be a great cruise. Yeah, I mean, it's...
You would be so catered to. I was kind of thinking that the other day. I'm like, I like to travel. You could get some really good deals, I would think. If you're a little adventurous
and you enjoy sitting in a Air Force base for 14 days between destinations, yeah, great time to travel. It's I've never been so uncertain of recording a show and the date of recording and it airing as far as what is going on. So that's why I wanted to preface it. You know, if somebody's sitting there listening to this going, you know, why aren't you talking about this or that? Well, because this is a day we're recording it. So it may be interesting to look back just a couple of weeks ago as to where things were at, as to where they are now. Because when chaos starts, it's
documenting it.
Yeah, it is. It's difficult to pinpoint. Well, what were we thinking at that moment in time? What were we feeling? You can listen to Office Horror Stories and discover the history of our country. This is our patriotic duty right here. I should have some patriotic music handy. That'd be great. I could do.
I mean, this does create office horror stories.
Or lack thereof, I guess. If nobody's going to work, they'll listen to this and reminisce about the horrible life in the office, and it'll make those crazy coworkers and evil bosses, you'll long for them by the time you're out of your house and your bratty kids making life hell for the next 3 months. It's like, give me the asshole boss.
I couldn't wait to get back to work. But because we were talking about this earlier, that there's someone I know very well, who is currently under a quarantine, even though the state's like, you know, you don't have to, but we highly recommend it. So it's a weird deal. Mm-hmm. But then I think it was one of her coworkers that reported it. So the thing is, she traveled someplace where they have an outbreak and then comes home. I get why coworkers would be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I think there's going to be a lot of that.
It is.
Like, well, you went to Seattle and you came back and therefore you got to be quarantined. And if you're not, you're going to be ostracized at work.
And what's going to happen is it's going to break down the function of businesses. So by the time this is airing, everybody's like, yep, this already happened. But here's the prediction is, you're going to have essentially, you know, all the cogs in the wheel here. And you take some of them out, things aren't going to turn. And we're going to have to wait for that person to get back. And by the time that person gets back, another one's going to be gone. And it's still not going to function quite correctly. And it's going to be chaotic for the next however many months of just trying to get anything done. Because somebody's going to be missing from the chain, or just the business is going to say, we can't function right now.
And I just hope they get the testing kits more widely available. So if you did travel someplace, rather than quarantine for 14 days when you're feeling fine, maybe you could get the test and you could rest assured that you don't have it.
It might save you 14 days. You know,
that's the problem right now. You just can't get tested. So there's not really an option.
That may be the thing that fixes that part of the giant mess. Is being able to affirm or not affirm that you have this or don't. And then you can go to work or you can't, or you should lock yourself in your basement with your cat. You know, it's like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So anyway, today it's fun stories about workplaces. Those are places that we used to go to before we were locked in our house.
Well, quarantined.
Yes. We'll do quarantine horror stories in fall. So start stocking up on those, and we'll be sure to share them. 833-HATE-JOB is our phone number, 833-HATE-JOB. Let's jump over to our first story. It says the names in these stories have been changed. I used to work for a small contractor company. My boss, Hutch, was the owner of the company, and he built the company from the ground up in the town he grew up in. He was a very hard individual to work with. The deck. During the summer one year, my boss decided to try an experiment. He wanted to try to step away from his company to streamline it so he could retire in a few years. At the time, I was a marketing executive and estimator assistant. After a few discussions with his office staff, he decided to leave the company to the estimator he hired, Marvin, about a year and a half earlier, who did have some management experience. Marvin was comfortable and confident that he could run Hutch's business well. The whole staff liked Marvin and were looking forward to having him run the place. Well, the summer ran well. Our largest project that summer was a sunroom and a deck addition to an old farmhouse in the neighboring town. Marvin and I felt that making sure we sell the job was important. So when we wrote up the estimate, we decided the following were the best options: to buy the material at the local home improvement chain instead of a lumber yard. The estimate was painstakingly cross-referenced with prices from the home improvement store. The labor was carefully analyzed and verified by the carpenters who were going to be building the project. The estimate was set up so if 80% of the material was purchased at the home improvement store, making money on it was guaranteed. Labor was built in so that unforeseen circumstances could be compensated. There was even the potential for homeowner reimbursement if the extra labor wasn't used. All bases were covered. The job pretty much fail-proof at about $56,000. The job sold, the deposit was collected, the contract was signed, and 2 weeks later, we started the job. Our best carpenter, Keenan, was the lead, and four others were assigned on a rotating basis as needed when extra help was necessary. Without a hiccup, all was going fantastic. By the time Hutch was back from his time off, the sunroom needed flooring, finished carpentry, and paint. The deck needed its railings and steps, and some of the composite decking needed to be installed. As Hutch looked over the projects, he likes the progress in most of them, but he attacked this deck and sunroom one. He insisted that the $56,000 was too low. Both Marvin and I tried to explain to him how we made this estimate and the hours that we poured into it to ensure accuracy and profit. He wouldn't hear it. He told both of us that we were wrong. He proceeded to point out the following faults. The composite decking was the wrong brand, and everything that had been installed needed to be removed. The removed decking and the rest of the decking that was supposed to be installed that had been set on the driveway had to be returned to the home improvement store, and Marvin was instructed to order the decking from the most expensive lumber yard in the area. Marvin tried to object. Hutch demanded and got his way. The home improvement store PVC railings were decidedly horrible quality and needed to be returned. Marvin and I compared the different types. The home improvement store's railing was thicker and cheaper. Hutch insisted ordering from the expensive lumber yard again. The chair rail inside the homeowner that the homeowner chose and wanted wasn't right. This was a comment. He shut up about it when the homeowner chimed in saying that she wanted it to stay. So it stayed. Hutch decided that the flooring, which sat in boxes in the corner of the sunroom, was of horrible quality and didn't want to be the company that installed such terrible flooring. Marvin tried to explain that this flooring, despite it being laminate from another home improvement store in the area, was a superior quality that we carefully researched and cross-checked. Hutch didn't listen and insisted it be returned, and that the laminate flooring comes from the expensive lumber yard. Hutch indignantly asked why thin plywood was hung on the wall instead of drywall, as Marvin explained that the homeowner wanted the wood texture through the paint and that the sunroom intended for three seasons. Hutch huffed and ignorantly explained the issues with plywood walls. Hutch didn't like this answer and berated Marvin, telling him that plywood shouldn't have been used on the walls. The plywood walls stayed up, at least. Then he asked about the ceiling and if it was going to be covered with V-match, like the wainscoting on half of the wall. Hutch didn't care that the homeowner wanted open rafters for a rustic look and insisted that V-match and 2x6 be installed over some pink fiberglass insulation. Thus, more material had to be ordered and expensive lumber yard. Hutch insisted that only one person was allowed to be on the job until the job was done. That one guy was Keenan. All the while, he'd pressure Keenan to get it done. Remorseless to how much work he added was at least 3 weeks of nonstop work. Hutch lost his mind when Keenan didn't have the work done in less than a week. All of these faults were to belittle Marvin and me because Hutch couldn't stand to realize that Marvin and me, but mostly Marvin, could actually have successfully had such a fancy home addition for the cost Marvin and I painstakingly made sure would be possible. All of Hutch's unnecessary changes brought the project up to $87,000. The homeowner could only pay an additional $5,000. Hutch blamed Marvin for the huge loss of money on the project. Keenan ended up walking off the job first thing in the morning when he was reamed out by Hutch less than an hour after he'd begun working, after he tried to stand up for himself and was pushed deep into the dirt for not working fast enough. This is just the tip of a huge iceberg. I'll share more office horror stories from this employer later. Well, that sounds like a lovely, lovely environment to be working in.
Well, and it makes you wonder if the guy was getting a kickback.
That's what I was starting to suspect.
Why they had to go to the expensive store. Like, why? Because that makes no sense.
It doesn't.
And for the homeowner, like, you know, I know that you hear it all the time. They're remodeling the kitchen. It took 6 weeks longer than it was supposed to, and it ran $5,000 over budget. You hear that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
But when you've agreed on all of the products and things that you're using, and then somebody comes in and says no.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be pissed.
You can't do that. I've remodeled a home or two in my life now, and products you don't fuck with. I mean, it's fine if you want to go to the homeowner and say, hey, you know, I know you like this product, but have you thought about this one? And then you can explain it, but at the end of the day, it's the homeowner's choice. It's not the contractor's choice just to change that up on a whim.
No.
And then expect the homeowner to just pay the difference. That's not how that works. You get a firm quote. It's one thing if you're, well, I want this wall gone, and you discover a wall of electric or a supporting beam that you can't control.
Not like the flooring that we said would work is not going to work. So we have to now, in addition to that cost, because you can't just return everything either.
No, you can't. No, it's a scary world out there with contractors. There are some wonderful ones who are honest and down to earth, hardworking people, and they are the salt of the earth, best people you could ever want to meet. And then you have some that are shady as fuck. Yeah, exactly. And it's like you really have to do your research on it. When we first moved over to when we were in Branson, we were basically going into a fixer-upper, and we documented a lot of that on an old podcast that we did. But when we had some stuff that we could not do on our own, we did a lot of it on our own, probably 80% of it, but there's just certain things we didn't have the qualifications to do. So we did a little bit of research initially, tried to find some contractors, and it was hard over there to find some. And this one guy that came out used this, turned out a fake last name. He used the name of like a local car dealership last name. So he thought, oh, they're going to really trust me because I have a popular last name. I didn't know the car dealership from Adam. I didn't connect those dots till later. But then draw up this quote, and it made no sense. He was someone who would go around to people who don't know what they're doing with remodels and swindle them easily. And then he wanted like a third of all the money for the entire project. And we had like a laundry list of shit. It wasn't just like, oh, we're going to redo this bathroom right now. It was like 7 or 8 different things at one time. We kind of wanted to get started, and he wanted to bill for all of it up front. It's like, no, that's not how this works. We'll go project by project, and I'm willing to pay, you know, a certain amount up front. I understand that, but he could never leave references. He could never come up with anything that was of any sort of validity or value. And then when I got kind of cold on him, then he started showing up on my doorstep going, hey, you want to start on that sometime soon? You want to start? It's like, no, I think I'm good. We changed our mind. We're not going to do it. Something else came up and we don't have a budget for it anymore. And he eventually left us alone, but he kept pressuring and kept pressuring. It was almost kind of creepy how he would it's like he desperately wanted the money, and he thought we were a clear mark to do it. And then, you know, It was like, nope, I don't think so. Thank God.
Would he have even done anything?
Exactly.
Like, if you've got $10,000 project and you gave him $3,000 up front.
Yeah. Yeah, and
do you ever see him again?
That's the thing. No, I mean, no, and it was more than that, too. It was a significant amount he wanted up front. It would have been like almost $15,000 just to, like, you know, as a down payment. And it was like, no, I don't think so, my friend. But it was it was Adventures, Ozark Engineering, if you will. And that's a whole other thing. That's actually kind of a term here in the Ozarks, because in many of these areas, at least up in Branson, there's no building codes. So there's all sorts of random shit that ways houses have been built incorrectly or not safely or bizarrely. And you go back and you got to correct it. And, you know, some contractors are like, if people just did this shit right the first time, we wouldn't have all these problems. But there's corners cut all the time. But it's an interesting world. It really, truly is. Anyhow, that's my soapbox about contractors. I think that's why we ended up doing so many things ourselves there. Like, I learned I built walls. You
couldn't find anybody you trusted.
Yeah. Or if you did, they were so booked out forever. It was hard. Like, we had one that was, like, good, but he's like, well, it'll be about 17 weeks before I can get on that. It's like, well, let's watch some YouTube videos and learn how to build walls. So we did, and we built walls in a weekend. I built two rooms by myself.
And it was quite amazing what you built.
It's like, holy shit, I built
it. It was pretty cool. Because when I went to visit once, I'm like, you guys did this and that? You guys did that?
Yeah.
You guys did that? Like, how did you do that?
YouTube is a wonderful thing. It's amazing what you can learn how to do now. And it really wasn't that complicated. I mean, it was work. It was hard work. But I'm proud of myself. I wouldn't do it again on a lot of those things. But I'm proud to say, you know, I did that once. I'm not afraid. I kind of checked that off my box. I built walls. I built rooms. Framed doors and from the ground up. And it was an adventure. But now it's like...
And it looked great.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, the new owners, I hope, are enjoying it. that was an adventure. 833-HATE-JOB is our phone number. 833-HATE-JOB to share your office horror story with us. Let's go to our next story. It says, I work for a large library system using my master's degree in library science. I got my job about 3.5 years ago, and I really like what I do. It has taken me several years to get into a job where I feel like I want to stay, not just because of the nature of the job. Working around books is pretty cool, but also because the people in my department are generally kind and thoughtful folks. I've worked in my share of places, from restaurants to big corporations, and never felt as welcome and seen as where I work now. My boss, particularly for the first 2.5 years or so, has been the actual best boss I ever have. We even share some personal interests, and I've considered her a friend for most of my time here. Last year, however, I was due to give birth to my first child, and everything went well with the birth. I worked right up until I went into labor in early March, and then began my leave time for 6 weeks. While I was out, no one was doing my job. My colleague picked up a couple little tasks, but she had her own work to do, so most of it was waiting for me when I returned in late May. It's hard adjusting to regular life as a new mom with an infant. Nothing is the same, and that takes some settling and rearranging of things like a morning routine, etc. I was also breastfeeding and needed to pump 3 times a day to keep up with my supply. I jumped into the deep end of my work and immediately knew the water was way above my head. If anything, I wish I'd asked for extra help then, but I'm not used to asking for help, so I didn't. One of our book vendors, who I work with to do my job ordering books, changed to a new process at the time as well, so things went even slower as I learned and adjusted to the new process. Over time, I was slowly catching up on work, but it was literally piling up faster than I could do it. I tried just working furiously and hard, but I could tell my boss and even some of my coworkers, all of whom are mothers, were not happy with the situation or me. The air in the department changed. I felt like people were judging me all the time. I felt like I was drowning and I didn't know how to get out. Someone listening to this might say, you couldn't just tell your boss you felt this way? I wish. Despite going through what I'm pretty sure now was postpartum depression, I also felt embarrassed that I couldn't do it all. I kept lying to myself, saying I could, and my boss pitched in, finally, for a couple of days. By December last year, I'd gotten almost all caught up, finally. But by then, my boss, whom I'd considered a friend, seemed to be avoiding me. She wasn't asking me how my daughter was doing or anything, and some of my coworkers followed suit, or at least it seemed that way. I felt isolated, exhausted, and defeated, but I tried to tell myself I just imagined things. My boss is going through her own health issues, and maybe she just caught up in that. I continued to do my job and tried to disagree daily with my gut feeling until one day in early January, after Christmas, she emailed me. Our offices are right next to each other, by the way, in a very irritated, accusatory tone, telling me all the things I haven't been doing or doing right. She also insinuated I wasn't doing anything, saying, "What are you actually doing?" That hurt a lot. I admit I cried a little. I had thought we had a good relationship, but in just under a year, I'd gone from loving where I worked to feeling stressed and sensing a palpable tension all day when my boss was here. I am, as of now, well ahead of all my work, but my boss is still avoiding me. I say, "Good morning," and I can hear her response is forced, yet she talks at length with other people. I'm at a point now where I'm looking for other jobs. Through all of this, and though all this isn't the only reason, I'm just disappointed that things have come to this point with a person I respect and admire. Hope I don't have to use those last two words in the past tense eventually. I miss feeling supported, and I miss the camaraderie that my department used to have. Yeah, I still have my job, and there are worse workplaces out there, but no one wants to walk into an environment every day that feels as though you have to win back some elusive goodwill from an authority figure. So I've stopped trying to do that. I do my job well and work hard for my own sense of pride in what I accomplish, but it still hurts that someone I considered a friend, who I still see every day, can't even talk to me. It's understandable. I mean, it's kind of what some people do when they still want to have a relationship, like with a parental figure or something, even though there's nothing coming back. It's like you just have to do it for yourself because there's a level of catharticism in doing just that, even though it's not a give and take.
But it makes me sad. Like, you spend too much time at work.
Yeah.
And especially if it was a job that you enjoyed and then you went away for a good reason, and she has the leave to go away and have a baby. You can take that time off. And it's like, did they resent her for it? You know what I mean?
It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder. And what I was going to say, or what I was running through my mind, and then she corrected it, was, well, I wonder if these people have kids. I mean, have they gone through it themselves?
She said they did, right?
They did, yes.
You know, I think because I have gotten to the point in my life where I just don't need the bullshit. So I just go ask. I'm like, what'd I do? Or what? And maybe you might get an answer you don't want to hear. But if it's a job you really like, and these were coworkers you got along really well at one time,
yeah,
it's like, because sometimes too, it's a perception. You know, when she came back and all the work was there and nobody had helped her, like, you can get really resentful from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of a choice, I think, to be happy and not.
Sure.
So I think might just go in and say, let's have an open discussion about this. What? Like, I will look for another job if that's what you think I should do.
Mm-hmm.
This is one I really liked. I'm good at it. And we got along at one point. Like, what happened to change it?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you just get caught in that spiral. It's like, well, I don't want to say anything to Marianne because Marianne's being a bitch. Well, then the next day, I'm not saying anything to her again. And then you just get in this weird avoidance thing. And it's like, because Marianne's a bitch. I don't know who this person is, but I just made that up. But, you know what I mean? So yeah. Then you start avoiding that person when really maybe what you need is a sit-down conversation with that person.
Yeah,
Especially if it's your boss.
And especially if there's evidence that the relationship was good at one time. And that, yes. And 'cause it may be working both ways. Sometimes when someone is really stressed out and they're working super hard and they're super just kind of exhausted, the boss may be taking it as you have no time for this relationship anymore. And they're, you know, it's kind of that thing where a lot of us who are kind of shy and kind of reserved in public, but people will look at you and think you're aloof or that you're,
snobby. Came back, there's all this work and she felt like she was drowning in it every day.
Yeah.
And should have asked for help. I think she said that.
Yeah. I mean, it could just be completely both sides have been reading the signals incorrectly, and it's created this whole relationship, you know, rift that really shouldn't be there if both sides could just open up and say, here's what I felt. Well, here's what I felt. And they realize, oh, shit, we've been reading each other wrong, and it's just festered into this big ball of negativity that doesn't even really need to be there.
You're waiting for them. You know, you're waiting for her to come to you, so you're not going to say anything. Mm-hmm. But then she's not going to say anything.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we put these like superpower, you know, things on managers as if they're going to just solve everything because they're the manager. They're just as human as we are. Yeah. It's like, and they have the same faults and the same, you know, insecurities and all that shit. And sometimes a manager, more than anything, I think if they're a good one, appreciates the employee that is going to tell it to them like it is and how they feel it to be. And it's not in a way of like, fuck you, I'm going to do your job better. But it's just like, here's how I feel. Here's what I'm seeing happening. Here's how I'm seeing your management is affecting me, is affecting others. And
what can I do?
Yeah. How can we fix this?
What can I do?
I like you. I'm not trying to get you fired. I want you to be here. And you know, I did that once. He ended up getting fired a couple weeks later. But it was a place where we had a general manager that I liked. I genuinely liked him before he became the general manager. We got along really good. And then he became the boss, the head boss of the whole building. And I think it just was almost overwhelming. And there was just certain things. And it was so many years ago now, I do not remember everything that went down or why such anxiety and angst was put against him. But enough shit was just not working right. And the environment was just getting shitty. And I, at that point in my job, was ready to leave because I was just ready to go off and do my own thing. But I wanted to stick around for maybe another year or two if it was going to get better. And I just one day went and sat down with him because we did have an okay, open relationship about talking about things. And I laid it out for him. I said, here's the deal. I said, I like you. I don't want to see you leave because you're frustrated. I don't want to see you get fired because everybody is going to form a mutiny against you. But you're a step away from a mutiny. And here, and I don't know if anyone is going to have the guts to come and tell you this, but I'm going to, and I'm telling it to you because I like you. And if you don't like me and you want to get rid of me after that, I'm fine with that too. But I'm coming to you with respect to share this.
Yeah.
And here it is. This is what I'm seeing. This is not necessarily all of my opinions, but this is what reality is around you. And I shared it with him. And he's at the end of the conversation, he was very respectful. He's like, I appreciate you coming to me. It, you know, it kind of takes guts to come and say that to the boss of the building. And I said, you know, I'm coming to you in good faith and with good intention, because I want the best for you. You can do better than this, and this can be a better place if things can be cleared up and the air can be cleared and we can admit some faults and we can say, here's what we can work on, everything. And I think it was probably too little too late, because I remember 2 weeks later, I was walking down the hall and I just said, hey, see you later. And I made some joke. I don't know what it was. But then the next day I learned he had been fired that night. And it was like, oh, shit. And I never heard from him again. And he's Facebook friends with a lot of people, but he's not with me. And I don't know why, because it's like, I don't know if he thought like I went and like ratted him out to corporate or something, because that was never what I did. It was never my intent. But I don't know. I'm not losing sleep over it, but it was just kind of like, I don't know. I've always been like that with my bosses. I just kind of like, look, I'm going to be honest with you. I hope you'll be honest with me. And it usually works out pretty well. It just depends who you're dealing with, though. Fragile egos, that does not work well with. Those are the first people that are going to fire you.
And I don't think putting it in an email is the way to go. No. I think it's like carve out some time.
Yeah.
Because I think, too, there's sometimes at work where we're like, let's go get a beer. We're having an off-site meeting. And in an off-site meeting, we can say whatever we want.
Yeah.
And that's my agreement with my boss. Once we go off-site, there's just sometimes that we do, and everything is, you can talk about anything.
Yeah.
And it's great.
It is.
And there's, you know, and the thing is there's sometimes too, not knowing this person's situation, that you are somewhat at fault, that there are things that you could do better. Sure. So if you go in it with the approach of, you know, this has really changed. I don't know why. What can I do? Mm-hmm. Here's what I've seen. Can we work together to make this better? And sometimes with the right approach, I think she might be surprised at the response.
Yeah.
It might be a lot of clarity. She also might go, it's time to go.
Yeah.
At least you would know.
It's all about intent. I mean, again, you have to weigh who you're talking to. If there's an ego and they can't handle that sort of shit, that's not the person to do this with. But if they're level-headed and there has been a good relationship, that's usually an okay window to go and say, here's the deal. You know, I'm coming to you with respect because I want this to work for everybody. And usually a solution can at least be attempted and you can go down that or attempt to go down that path. And if they, at the end of the day, you know, the roads have just changed so much that it just doesn't fit the same vehicles on anymore, then it is what
Bingo.
It is.
Bingo.
But but digging in and trying to be proactive on it is almost always better than just, I'm going to bitch about this and hate. And, you know, that just doesn't, it will not end well down that road. And it's
the only way that ends is she has to get another job, because you can't work like that.
And it's
just can't work in that environment.
You can't. And it's understandable to feel that way, but reality is usually not as horrible as we think it is. Although sometimes it truly is. But
exactly.
But
it's worth a shot.
It is.
It's worth a shot.
Definitely is worth a shot. 833-HATE-JOB is our phone number, 833-HATE-JOB, to share your office horror stories with us. We'd love to hear them. Be sure to press subscribe on every platform, and as you're listening to the show on, let your friends know we exist. Share us on social media. Follow Carol on Instagram, at Carol Hughes. Follow me on Instagram, at Tony Bruschi. Bruski is how you spell that. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Office Horror Stories.